participation in the Fall Fest last night. It was good to see everybody's teamwork. Appreciate the stuff that everybody brought. Food was great. Really grateful and thankful for everybody who decorated and cleaned up, and just your presence and the fellowship that we're able to have in Christ. It was a really wonderful time, and I appreciate you being there. Really appreciated the Lord's Supper meditation and the Sunday school lesson this afternoon. One of the phrases that I've always kind of enjoyed is that winning is getting up one more time than what you fall. And so we're all going to have opportunities to stumble. Probably that's going to take place for most of us. Okay, but the question is, are you going to get up? Are you going to get up from there? Because who knows that this might be really the last time that you have to get up. And so winning really is getting up one more time than what you fall. And we have opportunities to do that through Christ. One of the other things that I think is worth bringing out as well is that looking for those opportunities to grow, looking for those opportunities to learn is what Christianity and really life is all about. Are we learning? Are we growing? When we kind of get to a plateau where I've learned everything that I think I need to learn and I've grown as far as I need to grow, that's when you know you're really in trouble. And so we need to keep learning, keep growing, keep moving forward, to continue to be in God's will and to embrace the process of growth. Sometimes people push back against growth because growth means that I wasn't doing something right before. I think it's the wrong perspective to see growth as a whole. All of life is about growth. If Ember interpreted every correction as doing something wrong before, her growth would be stunted at 10 months old. But kids, they're always looking to learn, to grow, to increase to their knowledge and understanding, and then to build off of that without any judgment by their parents and without any judgment on their own. Well, we've got a father that wants that same thing from us. He's not looking to, we're his kids. He just wants us to continue to learn and to grow and mature, just like we want our kids to continue to grow and to mature. So, really good thoughts so far this afternoon, and hopefully I can have a thought or two that can be edifying as well. That would probably be pretty good for everybody involved. So let's go to Colossians chapter 2. Colossians chapter 2, we're going to continue on working through the book of Colossians here. We're up to verse 16 in chapter 2. Colossians 2, and I'm going to pick it up in verse 16. Therefore, let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink, or in respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. Those are the two verses that we're going to be focusing on, but I want you to get the rest of this context. Let no one keep defrauding you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of angels, taking his stand on visions that he has seen, inflated without cause by his fleshly mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom the entire body, being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments, grows with a growth which is from God. So, verses 16 and 17 here. Let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink or respect to festival or new moon or Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. A couple of weeks ago, the last time that we looked at the book of Colossians, we talked a lot about verse 15. We talked about the unseen realm. When Jesus had disarmed the rulers and authorities, he made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through him. We talked about that. We talked about when that took place. We talked about how the bad angels were disarmed. We talked about how Satan was cast down out of heaven, how he didn't have a place there in heaven anymore, and how all of this has taken place between Jesus' crucifixion and Jesus' ascension, that there was a war in heaven and that Michael and his archangels were victorious and that the Satan and his angels were disarmed. Jesus disarmed the rulers and the authorities, and we know all this through the scriptures. And it says in verse 15, okay, when he had made a public display of them. Well, is anybody seeing this with their physical eyes? Nobody's seeing this with their physical eyes, but through the message of the gospel, through the Holy Writ, then God made a public display of them. Just like we use the example in Galatians as well, is that, you know, Paul made the statement to the Galatians that Jesus had been crucified before their eyes. Well, Galatia isn't anywhere close to where Jesus was crucified. Those people didn't see Jesus crucified, but that was publicly proclaimed to them through the message of the gospel. They had the preaching of the gospel. Therefore, it was publicly displayed to them. In the same way, this disarming of Satan and the rulers and the authorities was made known to us through the scriptures. And so it's a public display, public information being made known to us. And Jesus has the victory. We win. That's the big message, is that the war is over. The war is over. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't any battles still going on. Jesus wins. Jesus is victorious, but he is allowing us to be victorious with him. He is allowing us to participate in this battle that is so much bigger than any one of us. This really is all about Jesus, and yet he's letting us take the victory with him. Andy brought up sports. I didn't. But, you know, it's kind of like if the game's already in hand, team's already up, 42-0 in the fourth quarter or something, and you get to play the last drive of the game, You got to have a participation in the victory. You got to have part in that win. Now, the game's already been won. 42-0, 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. The game's over. Nobody's coming back. But we get to have a participation in the victory that Jesus has over Satan. We get to participate in this spiritual battle. And we're on the winning side. So that's good for us to remember that no matter how bad things are going in the physical realm, we still win in the realm that matters. So if we have the perspective that we win no matter what is it that can force you to have a bad attitude? What is it that can force you to have a bad day? No matter what happens, we still win. We still win. And so it's important to see what's actually going on in the unseen realm. That's where the substance is. The substance is in the unseen realm. The substance is not in the realm which is apparent. Jesus disarmed the rulers and authorities. Jesus was victorious over the forces of darkness. Spiritual realms where the real substance is, the realm that you can't see with your physical eyes, the realm that you need to see with your spiritual eyes, where all the important things are going on. And it's important that we see these things from God's perspective. We have a tendency to think that it's the temporary things of this life that matter. It's Satan's trick. He's like a magician. He tries to distract you while making you a victim of his tricks. I'm terrible at this. I am awful. Like, I can never see what they're actually doing, right? They, you see, sometimes they'll have some of these magic tricks revealed or whatever. And I'm a pretty observant guy. And somehow, okay, they're able to make you look over here, and they're able to do something over here while you're looking over there. And all of a sudden, you know, you're like, man, that's great. How did that appear? You know? Or I'm sure that that lady was just cut in half and he's going to go, he's going to go on trial for murder before we know it. You know, like those are the type of things that Satan is trying to do. He's trying to get you to look over here and to be really concerned about the girl who's getting cut in half. Right. Like, you know, it's a trick. It's not real. She's not really dead. Right. And so in the same way, Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, and he tries to get you diverted into a place where you're still on the losing side of this ultimate eternal battle, right? That's where he's trying to do. Magicians try to divert your attention to the shiny object, and the same way Satan tries to divert our attention to all sorts of shiny objects. All sorts of things that matter in the physical realm. It's within this context that the Colossians and Christians today are encouraged not to let anyone act as a judge in the shadowy things, but rather to focus our attention to the substance. There's a huge difference between the fake thing and the real thing, right? I think Coca-Cola for a while, their slogan was the real thing, wasn't it? The real thing. I'll tell you guys one of my weaknesses today. I like Diet Coke. Okay? Like, I like Diet Coke. Probably I drink more Diet Coke than is healthy for me. Okay? And Diet Coke, to me, tastes really good. I like Diet Coke. There's a reason why I drink Diet Coke. To me, Diet Coke is the real thing. And you better believe that I can taste the difference between Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi. And I certainly can taste the difference between Diet Coke and Diet Sam's or Diet Faygo or Diet whatever. The real thing is the Diet Coke. Even though it's made of all sorts of chemicals that are not real, right? That's the real thing. Okay, well, there's a huge difference. When you know what the real thing is, it's really clear when we get the fake thing. I think I've used the example before that in banking, a lot of times they won't ever show a teller, they won't ever show the tellers what counterfeit money might look like. They show them what real Federal Reserve notes, notice I corrected myself and didn't call it money, what real Federal Reserve notes look like over and over and over. They'll show them that's what the real thing looks like. And so it becomes apparent then if a fraud comes through, because they might not even be able to specifically identify what is wrong with the bill, but they know that that's not quite right. That's not the real thing. It's another encouragement that when we're really in the Word and we're receiving good teaching often, and sometimes that same thing will happen to us in our spiritual appraisal. And you won't know immediately when there's a fraud or there's a shyster coming through. We won't know immediately why something is incorrect or false doctrine, but we know that that's not the real thing. Like, I want the real thing. And so the real thing and the shadow thing or the fake thing are two different things. There's an entire difference between playing a video game based in World War II and being in World War II. There are a lot of people that think they know a lot about World War II because, hey, Call of Duty 3 just came out, right? I think. I have no idea. Four. Sorry. Rats. I was trying to be relevant too. Call of Duty 4 just came. Well, hey, there's a big difference between playing games on a screen and real warfare, isn't there? A huge difference. Hint, kids that I was trying to be relevant to, war ain't glamorous. Okay? Well, playing middle linebacker for the Browns on Madden and playing middle linebacker for the Browns are two completely different things. One is the real thing, and one is the fake shadow. Now, are there some similarities on the TV? Sure. On the TV, there's some similarities. In fact, a lot of these video games are becoming so good that those who are not sports initiated, a lot of times they can think that the video game is, oh, I didn't even know that the Browns played on a Tuesday night. Well, that's because they don't, and we're playing Madden, Mom. Like, okay. Well, we want the real thing. We want the real thing. The substance belongs to Christ. So he's like, Paul's encouraging you here. He says, let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink or as respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come. But the substance belongs to Christ. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 12. Hebrews 7 and verse 12. For when the priesthood is changed, of necessity there takes place a change of law also. When the priesthood is changed, there of necessity, there also takes place a change of law. See, under the Old Testament, there's three holy days every year that they had to present themselves at the temple before the Lord, and they, in these 3 days, they were going there to worship. And the only place that was acceptable for the people to worship was at the temple in Jerusalem. And so they were to present themselves, and they had other holy days that was based upon the cycle of the moon. They had these festivals. And so the new covenant comes, and some of the Jewish Christians are like, well, we should really keep these days. We should really keep these festivals. We should really keep these Sabbaths. And what Paul is pointing out, he's like, look, these things were a shadow to point you to the substance. These things are not substantive in themselves. These things are simply the shadow to point you to the thing that actually matters. And so when there's a change in priesthood, there's a change in law also. And so under the new covenant, we now operate under the law of liberty. We now operate under the faith of Christ. And he says, let nobody act as your judge in respect to these Sabbaths, new moon festivals, so on and so forth, because those things were a vehicle to get you to the destination. They were not a destination in and of themselves. And so if somebody, you know, put yourself in, I think that there's two ways that we can approach this. First of all, put yourself in that culture in that day. So you're trying to be you're not trying to specifically alienate people, hopefully, right? And so there are going to be people in the church that had specific convictions because their culture is so wrapped up in Judaism. They have 1500 years of culture that they are going to be celebrating these festivals, these new moons. And he's like, look, they want to celebrate the festivals and the new moons. Let them. But we are not going to make this a law. We are not going to make this a decree. We are not going to let anybody act as your judge, because Judaism and Christianity are two separate things. Two separate things. So let no one act as your judge. Well, I think that we can make some correlations there for our culture and holidays and festivals as well. You look at Christmas. Christmas, I couldn't believe it. I think I might have told you guys this, but I was doing some planning here recently. I was like, okay, I'm looking at my schedule. I'm like projecting 6 weeks out or so. I'm like, oh my goodness, I have to be planning for the holidays. Like, Thanksgiving is like 3 weeks away, and Christmas is just a month after that. I mean, I was like, wow, we are here. we are here. This is crazy. But Christmas, okay, if you go back and you look at some of the roots of even Christmas, if you go back and look at some of the symbolism that goes along with a lot of Christmas things, I mean, you can get yourself lost in a lot of minutiae there. And we could like say, okay, well, these things have pagan roots in Christmas, so nobody's celebrating Christmas. Okay? I've heard people get there. I know a guy who was in a Church of Christ one time that he did not celebrate Christmas. Period. Never. No gifts, no Merry Christmas, nothing. Okay? It's interesting. He had a daughter and some things changed. That was his conviction, right? Is he allowed to have that conviction? You betcha. Is he allowed to make that my conviction? No. Is he allowed to state that conviction strongly? Sure. Is he allowed to make that my conviction? To put me under that, to be my judge in regard to those things. You know, I look at Christmas and a lot of people think that it's Jesus' birthday and gives them a reason to be happy for no reason. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that the world thinks about Christmas, right? And if I can play into that, okay, and if I can use that as an open door, why not? Okay? Why not? So, again, let no one act as your judge in regard to these things. There are those who come in to spy out our liberty, and those people who come in to spy out our liberty can come up with all sorts of excuses why the shadow is actually important. But observance of the shadow has a tendency to actually take away from the substance. The more emphasis that you place on the shadow, the more inflated that the shadow becomes, and it actually starts to take away from the things that actually matter. If we flip over just a page or two to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 1. For the law, since it has only a shadow of the good things to come, and not the very form of things, can never by the same sacrifices year by year, which they offer continually, make perfect those who draw near. So the law contained a shadow, but not the very form, not the very substance. And the shadows the law, the sacrifices of the law, the trappings of the law, these are meant to point to Christ. They're vehicles to get to the destination. Vehicles serve a purpose. There are people that are car guys and that sort of thing, I understand that. Okay, but vehicles serve a purpose. When Andy is driving around Baton Rouge, it's to do the testing. Okay, when I'm taking a trip, let me use this example. I'm taking a trip to go to Billings. Like for family camp or something like that to see the in-laws. I take a trip. I jump in my vehicle. Okay. Jump in my vehicle to get to a destination. I don't jump in my vehicle just because I like to drive. Especially that many hours to Billings, Montana. It's to get to a destination. In the same way, the shadow is to point to a destination. And Hebrews 10 and verse 1, it says that it's a shadow of the good things to come and not the very form of things. I remember being a young kid, and I don't know why this is so ingrained in my memory, but I remember it being late at night, and I think that that was one of the things, that when you're little, things that happen at night are really cool, you know? And so I was, 3 or 4, and I was with my older sister. I was with her, and her friends, which they were all teenagers, so that's really cool. And so we're walking around, and it's just the street lights. They're lighting up where we used to live in town. And it's the first time I was really noticing shadows. Like, I could see how my shadow would move and my shadow would expand and my shadow would contract and their shadow. And I was like looking at, oh man, these shadows are really cool, as the 3-year-old was, or so was thinking, right? I remember being aware of these shadows. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't have a picture of Brenna and Ember's shadow with me or in my office. I don't have a picture of their shadow. I'm like, oh man, can you stand right there? Okay, I'm going to take a picture of the shadow. Who cares? It's a shadow, man. What you want is I want a picture of Brenna and Ember together. I want the form. I want the real substance. I want the thing that's actually there. I don't want the thing that's casted from that. Stand right there. Let me take a picture of your shadow. I want a picture of the form. I want a picture of the real thing. In the same way, God wants us to understand and appreciate the form, the real thing. Okay? Shadow. Another example is example of like when a painter is approaching a painting for the first time. A painter might use pencil markings to etch out on the canvas where he's going to paint. Okay? But the pencil markings aren't the amazing thing. It's the paint that's put on the pencil markings that's amazing. Again, the Old Testament's just the pencil markings, God telling us this is where I'm going to go. This is where I'm headed with it. But the paint is the real thing. That's God's completed work. Right? God's wanting us to understand the real completed work. And it's our challenge to value things from a heavenly perspective. Let's go to John chapter 3. There are all sorts of shadows that demand attention, or that, let me put that a little bit differently, that try to demand attention. One of the religious fads that has seemed to really pick up here recently is all sorts of Protestant or denominational churches having Passover seders, or seders, right? And they're really big. Well, let's celebrate the Passover. Let's have a big Passover celebration. Oh yeah, I know that that's old covenant stuff, but we're going to have a Passover celebration because, you know, Jesus celebrated the Passover. So let's all come together and have a Passover celebration, and we'll just experience the same things that Jesus experienced. Well, guys, in a vacuum, I guess I don't have a huge problem with that. But the problem that I do have with that is that people put a lot of time and work and effort into something that is simply a shadow. Something that was used to point to a much bigger and a much more important meal that we get to participate in a weekly basis. And so that examination or that emphasis placed upon that shadow, where we go to all this work, get all of this extravagant food to put together what we think a Passover Seder would have looked like while drawing elements from mostly the Talmud, which is not a biblical document, and then we're feeling spiritual. Guys, this is a spiritual meal. This is where the physical meets the spiritual in this meal. This is where Jesus said in some of his last words to his apostles on earth, do this in remembrance of me. This is the meal that matters. But you see how the great magician Satan is saying, hey, look at, oh, well, what kind of lamb are we going to get? And, you know, what exactly is acceptable during a Passover Seder? Guys, come on. It's a shadow. It's a shadow. It's not the substance. John chapter 3. John chapter 3 and verse 3 is what I want. Jesus answered and said to him, truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Literally there, that's truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born from above. In Christ, we are born from above, and we need to see things from that heavenly perspective. See things from the perspective where we're at. It's kind of interesting. One of the things that I've noticed is that people kind of use this phrase, you don't know where I'm from, or you don't know where I've been through. That whole idea of you don't know where I'm from, it is interesting to me how geographic location can kind of inform your view on the world. It's true. I mean, geographically, where you were born, maybe the status that you were born into, different, those things definitely inform your initial paradigm. And you can choose to challenge that initial paradigm or not to challenge that initial paradigm. But it does inform the way that you view the world, okay? And, or, I wasn't raised that way. We were raised two different ways. I've heard that used in all sorts of different contexts, right? Not quite sure what it means, but I think that what is trying to be communicated is that because of my context, this is the way that I am. Guys, since we are from above, that certainly should inform the rest of our lives. That location should inform our action. That location should inform our perspective. And so, since we are from above, we're going to see things from the heavenly perspective. We're going to look for the substance. The substance clearly is Christ, particularly Christ in glory. The grand event of the temple was the offering of the high priest of Israel on the Day of Atonement. This statedly prefigured the offering of Christ's own blood in heaven itself. So we have the shadow, but then we have the substance. The shadow is the high priest on the Day of Atonement. The substance is Christ offering his own blood in glory. Shadow, substance. The Passover pointed to the day of Christ's crucifixion as the ultimate Passover lamb. Pentecost, the feast of the beginning of harvest, set in motion the true harvest of the first souls as recorded in Acts chapter 2. The beginning of harvest, the beginning of the reaping of souls, right? Oh. It's interesting that the next festival that comes is the end of the harvest, okay? The Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Ingathering in the fall, was a type of the marriage supper of the Lamb, wherein all the redeemed have been gathered as the angels finish the final reaping of the souls of men. So again, shadow, substance. The substance is to come, the marriage supper of the Lamb. The Sabbath foreshadowed the rest that comes from the peace of being reconciled to God through the sacrifice of Jesus, and the dietary regulations of clean and unclean set a basis for discerning moral and immoral behavior. Again, God is giving us the shadow so that we might understand the substance. The saint of the new covenant, then, is to focus on the glorified Christ and not get pulled back into the trappings of the physical covenant. The substance of the faith of Christ is what is able to preserve, to continue to save our souls. If we focus on Christ in glory, that will enable us to cross the finish line of life victoriously. One of the themes that's kind of come through this assembly is that idea of continuing to push through. No matter what circumstances come, continuing to push through, to continue to power through, and to cross the finish line of life. Well, if we focus on Christ in glory and we maintain that focus, our victory is guaranteed so that we can continue to be with Jesus on the winning side of this cosmic war. I'm thankful that he's enabled us to be on the winning team.
Seven seconds.